This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the January 27th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornatale, and we are coming to you live, or as live, from the National Handicapping Championship. Going to have a series of guests on the show today. We did this format last year at the NHC, and it worked out very well, so we're going to rekindle it again this year. The first guest is actually the person without whom there would be no DRF Players Podcast, the guy whose idea it was, and the guy who, in my mind anyway, will always be the DRF Players Podcast host emeritus, Matt Bernier. Matt, how are you doing today?
Good, Pete, man. We're here. It's another year down. I feel a little bit now. This is interesting, like the shoe's on the other foot, where I haven't been on in, geez, it's been how long? It's been too long, but yeah, I'm in the other seat now. We're just kind of kicking back. It's kind of the end of day one. We just had the last chance qualifier wrap up. And I say day one really begins tomorrow.
Yeah, this is like day minus one or something.
This is kind of the calm before the storm.
NHC Eve.
I also feel a little bit, you know, anybody that's watching, I feel a little bit like Brent Musburger right now with the headset on. Like, I just.
I kind of used his
you
line
are
there
looking
too.
Live.
That's a good impression. You know? It's an excellent impression.
But no, everything's good, man. I'm excited. I am always jealous. This is 2 years in a row. You know, I qualified the first time I tried, that was 4 years ago now. Then I tried to qualify that second year. That didn't happen, unfortunately. And then the past 2 years, last year and this year, working for the forum, ineligible. I'm envious of everyone that's here. I wish I were playing.
I heard a rumor that I want to run by you. We're going to talk out of school. This is the kind of thing, when you listen to the Players Podcast, you get a little bit more of an unvarnished look sometimes at how things go down. There's a rumor going around that it's possible, conceivable, nothing promised, but that DRF employees may again be... not again, may for the first time at some point in the future be able to play in the NHC. Should that rumor turn out to be true, what would be your feelings on that?
I'd be ecstatic. I mean, it would be another way to get back into things. You know, it's unfortunate, obviously. I can understand why we're ineligible at this point, but at the same time, I look at it the other way and say, why are we ineligible? I mean, it's not like this is something that can be, you know, don't want to be thinking negatively, but I mean, it's not something that can be
fixed
or rigged or anything like that. I mean, look, and if you want to have some sort of complete transparency where all of our picks are available as soon as the race goes off, similar to how the final table works here
at the
NHC.
That's an interesting idea.
I mean, I'm on board with anything that can get us all back into it, because I know a lot of the guys would love to play, and unfortunately we're not allowed to. But I mean, it is what it is at this point. If the rule is somehow changed and there's, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, I'd be very intrigued. If not, and it's nothing more than fodder, then, you know, it is what it is. And at the end of the day, our job's our job.
So for those who don't know, and most of you probably do who are listening to the show, but there might be some new people who have joined in the last few months who don't know your extensive history as a contest player. You ran sixth, was it, in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge 2 years ago, sixth or seventh?
Sixth, yeah.
And then that same year, you won outright in the Aqueduct contest, a contest that may well end up, speaking of rumors, from what I hear, being the final mythical money Aqueduct contest. You played again in the BCBC this year. You haven't been on the show since the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. Tell us how that went down.
Yeah, it was a tough week, a tough weekend, just because you had so much other stuff going on, which made things a little bit more difficult.
You mean with work?
Yeah, with work for things, whether it was here with the forum, whether it was NBC, whatever it may have been. And the other problem for me was, and it's not an excuse, it's just a lack of interesting opinions for me. There was one horse I was intrigued with that was a middle-ish number, and Stephanie's Kitten won, but I mean, I didn't play strongly enough or heavily enough on her to really make any sort of a dent. I had, I think, $8,500 with four or five races left. I had plenty of ammo. It's just I didn't have any super strong or interesting opinions, and I was wrong down the stretch, and it is what it is. I mean, you can't expect to go into them. Realistically, you want to go in. You have the mentality that you can win, and you know you have the ability, but at the same time, percentages and you know, law of averages, it's not going to work every time. You're not going to win every time you play. So it was a little bit disappointing, but at the same time, that's the risk you run. You go in, you try and go for broke, try and win the thing.
Let's talk a little bit about what you're doing here at the NHC, what we're doing here at the NHC. DRF.com, the best place to get up-to-the-minute news and information. Talk about what your role is going to be and tell the people listening how they can follow every minute of excitement here at NHC 17.
Yeah, we're going to be basically anchoring the coverage here at TI throughout the entire duration of the contest. We've done some interviews already today. Those will be up on DRF.com shortly. We've got all sorts of analysis. We've talked to Mike Watchmaker already, talking about how the mandatories are selected. And then on Saturday, we're going to be coming here live. Dan and Mike back in the studio in New York, they're going to start things off on Saturday afternoon at the normal time, 3 o'clock. We'll go through some races. Then they'll throw it to us here, where I'll kind of anchor the coverage, where you'll come on with me for a little while. We'll have Mike Watchmaker come on. Hopefully, if things work out, unfortunately for certain players, if they're not in the contention anymore, maybe we can have them come on as well. But we're basically going to bring it through the home stretch. We're going to be turning for home here in the NHC, and we'll bring you through it and hopefully get a little bit of an interview afterward with the unofficial winner, because obviously you have to go through audit and everything. But, yeah, we'll be kind of just anchoring things here for the next few days.
Yeah, DRF Live, the place to be. I'll be posting hourly updates at least on there, giving you a chance to get to know the players better, giving you an insight into some of the strategies that are going to be on display. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'll be giving some updates on there, at Looms Boldly. Your Twitter as well?
At Bernier underscore Matt. There may be some more. I had the maiden voyage of Periscope earlier
today. I saw that.
You were involved
cool.
with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it looked very neat.
There may be more of that to come.
I hope so.
Yeah, maybe
that
more of that
to come.
That was
kind of fun.
An interesting little, you know, tidbit.
So. I like it. All right. We're going to let you get to work. We're going to transition to our first guest. Maybe I'll put you on PA duty and see if you can send our man up here.
Go find Danny Kay.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just riff while I let you do that. But thank you, brother. Great to have you on the show. And just one last little tease, folks. You haven't heard the last of podcasts involving Matt Bernier.
Period. End of story. The walk-off. Drop the mic.
Dropping the headset is not as exciting as dropping the mic. But, yeah, we're going to bring up Dan Kovaleski here. Dan, for players that don't know, he's got several claims to fame, okay? He is he's one of the members of I got to ask this as a question. Have a seat here in the middle, and we'll get your headset on. We'll get everything we'll get everything sorted out. Now, Dan, were you one of the players who was sitting at Jonathan Kinchin's table last year at the NHC?
You know, I was not.
Did you get mixed up with that motley bunch?
Nick Tamaro, Steve Bick, we kind of message boards and Sirius Radio. We all kind of got together that way and Twitter, and we all are on the same age. We all like horse racing, and we meet at events like this.
You're part of the famous group chat, the group text chat.
Absolutely.
That I wrote about a little bit earlier. I ran into DRF's own and friend of the podcast, Lonnie Goldfeder, earlier today in the gym here at Treasure Island, and he talked to me about the importance of the company you keep as a racing fan and how that can improve your game. What are your thoughts on how these high-profile friends, guys like Kinchin, Nick Tamaro, how has that affected your play?
I think you can't help but absorb some of these things, and you maybe look at a race one way and they may look at it a different way, and just having that conversation kind of sparks questions or interest, and you may find an angle that you never thought of, but they always use it. Every day it's something different that we'll talk, you know, stupid stuff, but it all of a sudden can add up to some good long shot angles and horses for courses and things like that.
So, Dan, I've buried the lead here. My old journalism teacher would be extremely disappointed with me. I will admit, I've wanted to have you on the show for a while, but the reason you're here is that you were actually the outright winner of the Last Chance contest here today at Treasure Island. For finishing first in this contest, you not only get your second seat to NHC 16, you also walk with $16,000. You put up a monster score. What got into you today?
You know what, I've stayed away from Gulfstream this year. It's usually an Achilles heel for me. And then when the contest came up, Tampa and Gulfstream only, I said, well, let's dive in heads deep. And ended up coming up with six winners at Gulfstream today. And
six winners.
Yeah, so
that's a sweet day.
It worked out well. It worked out very well.
That's fantastic. So. Was there a particular horse or any moments of strategy in the contest, anything that I should include in my little DRF Live recap I'm going to be writing later?
You know what, I was coming into Gulfstream. They always had these huge fields, and you're kind of thinking, oh, this is a 20-1 I might want to play. But so often these horses, it's the Mike Makers, the Joe Sharps, you know, the Ramsey horses are 5-1. They should be a little bit lower, but they kind of get their bet, but they're not bet as hard as they should be, in my opinion. And you know, I'm winning off $18 win place, $18 win place, $20 win place, and it's kind of build it from there.
You had a couple of Ramsey runners in the sequence.
Yeah, but you know, hit four straight races at Gulfstream and weren't big prices, but you don't need big prices as long as you're right about your opinions and can get some winners home.
That's a great point. It's a very new school attitude. It's not just about reaching for those prices. It's also about just creating a critical mass of winners. How long have you been involved in tournament play?
You know, about 4 years now, 4.5 years, and it kind of slowly got wound up into it. And you know, a couple years ago did well, real well here, and kind of gave myself the confidence to compete with a lot of this, you know, the big players in the room. And
was that the final table appearance?
Final table,
you had?
Yep, a couple years ago, 2 years ago.
That's right, the first year of the final table. You were sitting up there with Ryan Flanders and Jose and the rest of the crew.
Absolutely, and you know, that kind of just taught me a lot about, you know, staying cool, sticking to your game plan, and you know, finished fifth place out of, you know, 500 people, and why not do it again tomorrow and then Friday?
Dan will be trying to go one better. One last question before I get you out of here and we move on to our next set of guests on today's DRF Players Podcast. How important is it to you to have that second entry?
It's huge. If you noticed last year, you know, someone told me half the guys who finished top 50 had two entries.
I didn't realize that.
And it was kind of my goal this year. I said, you know, I really got to try to get two. I had a hard time getting one to start off with, but got one late and then, you know, came in a day early here just to, you know, take a shot at this, and you know, it worked out well. And now you can play a bit more loose or find a vulnerable favorite somewhere and, you know, play some larger prices and hope to get a few of those home tomorrow and Friday and Saturday.
I like that attitude. By looking for those vulnerable favorites, that's where you choose to fire those additional bullets. I think that's a smart approach for sure. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
Appreciate it.
Congratulations on your awesome performance today. And we're going to bring up our next guest here. This is sort of, we're transitioning to the family feud portion of the DRF Players Podcast. We've got a couple of guests coming along with that in mind. So I'm going to introduce now Jennifer Prince and Damian Sasso. And you guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Pete.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I met you here in this room. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
Last year, and I think we actually, now that I think about it, we actually met you at the Breeders' Cup 2 years ago.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
At the last race, we like saw you, and I just recognized you, and I was like, hey, Pete, what's going on?
Usually, I sort of have these amnesiac moments when it comes to Breeders' Cups and NHCs, because I'm going in 16 different directions as I am here. So let me ask you this. What is it like, and you can answer this in any order you want, but what is it like to be, I mean, as a husband and wife, you're necessarily a team, but you're also competing against each other. How does that talk to me about how that dynamic works?
You know what? It's actually a lot of fun. Damian and I have known each other for a very long time, and we just have a really great dynamic. We like to bounce ideas off each other, and it's fun to win. So it's great when one of us does have the right horse, and you know, the other one might not. But it's also, you know, it's really helpful to do it together and have the support of doing this, because it can be a lonely sport.
So that's a great point. So some of those days alone in the basement, screaming at the screen, it seems like having that kind of, having somebody else to who shares in that could definitely change the experience. Damian, would you just echo those sentiments, or do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just you know, it's been amazing to be able to share share handicapping with Jennifer as we got to know each other, and you know, it was always something that was part of my family. And she became part of our family, and it's become like a family thing for her and I, and it's wonderful. We really enjoy it.
Now, from what I understand, you guys have kind of different approaches. Why don't you tell me about how you each look at handicapping?
So I'm a very, like, data-driven guy. I think, you know, use a couple of software programs, kind of look at big data-type angles, and I wasn't always like that, but I kind of evolved into that. And, you know, I think...
Yeah, I'm a little bit more traditional. I'm definitely more angles-based, very interested in probabilities and, you know, what might be the best probability to look at for a certain race. And I love potential, so, you know, I'm probably the one who's sort of winging it more, I'd say, than Damian is.
Have you mentioned that you using data to look at horse racing. Have you ever used any sort of data angles to analyze the best way to play in a tournament?
Yeah, I mean, that's been one thing, Jennifer and I have talked about for a long time, and I think, you know, there's a lot of ways to go about doing this, but you know, we certainly, I maybe me more than her, and I've influenced to sort of take a look at other players, how they play. You know, obviously there's been so many great players this year, you know, off the top of your head, Kinchin, Tommy Massis, and taking a look at how they go about what they've picked, or at least how theorize how I think they go about what they picked. It's probably something I focus on a lot more, me personally.
Yeah, I mean, for me, watching Damian go through sort of the contest experience last year was very educational, because I had never approached handicapping from a contest perspective. It's very different, obviously, than cash betting. You know, we used to be very good multi-race wagers, and betting a pick five at Del Mar is a lot different than playing in a contest. So I watched what he did last year, and I tried to sort of emulate that. So he's really the person that I look to for a contest sort of preparation.
Tell me about that transition you made from playing cash to tournaments, Jennifer. What was, for you, the biggest difference when you're looking at a tournament versus your everyday cash play?
I think it's really freeing in a tournament. I like mythical wagers, as weird as that sounds. It's very, you know, it's much more, there's a lot more possibility. And it's a lot more fun to hit a capper, you know. And I know that sounds strange, because, you know, you can put $100 on a really long horse and make a lot of money, or you can, you know, win a contest, and it, there's sort of that excitement of winning and having that capper and having you know, just handicapping well for the day and having that whole perspective. When I was a cash wager, you know, I was a small time cash wager. When we used to do it, we'd, you know, go away, we'd travel a little bit. We love Del Mar, we'd go there a lot.
Fantastic place.
Yeah, and we'd you know, we'd make small bets, and I always wanted to hit the 50 cent pick five, or, you know, I wanted to like win from a smaller scale and just get a little bit of money and just have fun for the day. Contests obviously open up a lot more, and there's so much out there and so many things you can do with contests.
Sure, a chance to come here and play for $2.45 million. dollars.
Absolutely.
So you qualified for the NHC via the tour.
Yes.
Talk to me about your experience. When did that sort of back door, if you will, for qualifying to the NHC become on your radar, and tell me about your experience on the tour this year?
Well, the tour this year, actually, I signed up last year while we were sitting here with Damian.
Fantastic.
You know, I think I actually just did it right at the table. And, you know, the old saying, what is it, the tour finds you, right?
Exactly.
What happened was, you know, we played a couple live contests throughout the beginning part of the year, and we were playing together because we play together. We had no intentions of necessarily even making it, and I think it was around, what was it, August, Damian, when you turned to me and you said, this is real, like, we could actually do this.
It was actually the August free contest. The August free contest that started, I think it was like August 2nd, we had handicapped this together, and she picked, we'll never forget the horse, I'm a Gem in Gulfstream Park.
Sure.
Horse was, we both liked it. We had an odds line on it. What, like
it was
8
long.
To 1, yeah. 10 to 1 we thought the horse would be. Horse is taken up to 65 to 1.
Oh, my goodness.
And we should have played it on both of our entries in the free contest, but she'd found the horse first, so we said, you know, rightfully, it's on her entry.
Okay. That's how we do that.
Right? I like that. Rightfully,
that's how we do it. If someone finds the horse, if one person feels better about the two things, rightfully, it goes on her entry. So I said, Jennifer, it's on your entry. And I guess the cool thing of playing as a family is that the horse is turning for home, coming down at 65 to 1, and we're jumping up and down together, like in our apartment, just freaking out. So
that's great.
And that was kind of cool. We couldn't put it together there, but we saw, like, only I think 32 people had the horse. So once we figured that, we're like, get a lot of tour points, and she can do a chase for it. So
for folks who don't know, you have to finish in the top 10% of a contest to earn those valuable tour points. So in a free contest, how many people played in that one? 2,500.
That one was, I think it was like, it was definitely 2,000.
So if you're in the top 200, you're getting some points. If you get a horse like that, a separator, where did you end up finishing?
I don't remember. It was
21st.
Right. Yeah.
But so that's like a huge result. You'll get more points for that than you will for finishing, you know, second or even winning some tournaments, I would imagine. So that was just an absolutely huge result. Fantastic stuff. Let me ask you this. Have you been in a situation yet in your handicapping careers where you've maybe started out playing together, but you end up in a competitive situation head to head against each other? Or have you always so far been on the same side of things?
I don't know that we've ever competed against each other.
Well, it's funny, we do have that one cash betting story. We both bet the pick three together.
Oh, yeah,
that was
cute.
And we both bet the same pick three. We didn't realize it until we both hit it. And then it was like, well, I hit it for less than you did. You know, like, so that was it, really. But that was like a $4 pick three, you know, something like that. It was
yeah,
silly.
Yeah, and I think it's always been, it's always kind of been a team thing. I mean, last year we were here in my name, but, you know, both of us had as much to do with me being here as the other. And it's kind of the same way around. I mean, we both, you know, teamed up and in her name, and you know, we just really kind of enjoyed doing that. It's been awesome.
That's great. And so so that makes perfect sense. And you're always, even if you're competing against each other, again, this the family angle, the sort of theme of the show today, you're always going to have that that teamwork. And you know, there's been other stories as well. Peter Wagner and not Peter Wagner. Brian Wagner and his wife Judy Wagner, who won the NHC, playing in a lot of tournaments and getting to really cheer each other on and help each other out. I think it's great for the game. And I see other husband and wife teams here, and I always think it's a fun thing to sort of follow, especially when you know in this situation where you're both obviously doing your own work. I mean, has that been an issue at all? Has anybody ever made any assumptions as a female player that maybe that wasn't the case?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do think it's something that I encounter, and you know, I encounter it in other walks of life as well, and that's just the way it is. But I think anyone who talks to both of us knows that we're both very interested in the game, and it's important that we're both out there and talking about our ideas. And it just worked out that we, you know, think very similarly, and we have a lot of opinions that work off of each other. And if people are looking at me like for whatever reason I might not be here legitimately, or it's not my ideas, then I just encourage them to talk to me.
Exactly. The proof is in the pudding, and yeah. We talk for 2 minutes, and it's like, okay, yeah, she knows what's going on.
I think the bigger than competition is more when we don't listen to each other, and then it comes back to really like when someone makes a strong opinion and says like, I really think we should do this, or you know, or vice versa, and we don't listen to one another, and then we're sitting there going, oh, didn't we listen to each other? Why didn't I listen to you?
And
that'll be the case. Yeah, that'll last for a long time.
You've had a few of those? Any horses in particular? Any stories there?
Oh, I have one great story. I mean, last year when one of the Breeders' Cup betting, BCBC's been like the dog for us to get into, and Jennifer had found a horse. You bought her that we followed for the longest time.
Sure.
And she found it last year for a BCBC pick and pray. And I go, okay, you found it, great. I'll play it. Wins, we don't get in. But we end up doing one of these Monmouth Cash tournaments. We go down in a blizzard in like a train to go play this horse. Horse comes up and...
It's crazy.
This is great. And we played in her name, and I have to be the one that makes the actual cash bet. I bet horse goes off at 16-1. I think we have $100 in Jen's bank account at the time, enough to win the contest. I think I end up betting $30.
$30.
And Jen goes...
You remember that number. I saw the way... 30. No hesitation.
What happened?
Why did you bet $30? I go, I don't know.
It seemed right.
Oh, man.
Things like that, and we have countless stories behind them, and it's great. But
of course she won.
She won, and Jen finished 10th instead of first.
That's right. It was still fun. It was a great tournament. It was a good story.
Now she swipes all the cards.
Yeah.
Makes the final decisions
now I'm
behind.
The money manager.
A lot of partnerships have that kind of aspect where somebody is more meticulous maybe and is responsible for putting in the bets. And do you guys, at this point, is that pretty much your role? Or do you guys divide up how you execute when you're in terms of physically putting in?
We've altered, and I think it's back to her now because of some mistakes in the last contest by me again. So, it goes back and forth by whoever's, I guess, riding the hot hand at the time. So, it's probably back in her court now.
I mean, but it's hard. It's hard to do both. You know, it's really hard. And I think in a lot of cases, you know, I really respect Damien's opinion. He's been doing this longer than me, and he's, you know, got a great memory, and he's really great with data. And the things that he can come up with just amaze me. So if I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, well, I'll focus on the money. I have to trust him, and I do. But then, of course, I can't handicap as much if I'm worried about sort of our cash management or our contest play. So it's really a balance, and we have to really work together and communicate.
How are you feeling coming into this year's event?
Definitely a little more prepared than last year. Last year was great. I mean, first 2 days, I was unprepared because I think I also didn't get enough time to really compare notes with her on what I wanted to play and what our strategies
just
were.
Just life got in the way type of deal?
Yeah, a little bit, and a little bit sloppiness in first time here.
Yeah, it's hard.
I made some adjustments, did well in the consolation tournament, got third, got some money, got to leave, which was great. But I think this year we're a little bit more prepared comparing notes. You know, you have some opinions that are stronger than me in some spots, so we're going with those, vice versa. And I think that's you know, 1 year in our belt doing this is, I think, definitely helping.
Yeah. So you've got 18 plays tomorrow. Obviously, mandatory races account for 8 of them. How much do you know about what your tickets are going to look like tomorrow?
I think enough at this point.
Yeah, I think right now we're at the point where we're just whittling down our choices in terms of our optionals, you know, and ranking them. We've done a lot of work today, and we're going to obviously continue working, and tomorrow we'll be in a good spot.
If you know you have to make 10 optional plays, how many races do you want to have on your radar to make sure that you'll get to that 10?
That's a good question.
15 to 20?
Yeah, that sounds
right. That feels right.
15 to 20, or split, kind of like when you look at strategies, I think you kind of, it's a Thursday card, and last year the first day was a Friday card. So, you know, by nature, you know, think about it as like a big data angle. By nature, Thursday cards are a lot more chalky.
Should be chalkier.
And you don't necessarily want to walk in. I have a tendency, and I think you've helped me fix this, to be all trying to play long shots. I think we don't want to necessarily do that tomorrow, but, you know, you also want to take what comes, what's there. You want to let the game come to you, right? You don't want to force the issue and then walk into Friday and you have nothing in your bankroll because, you know, as people always say, you can lose the contest on day one, but you can't win it.
Yeah, so. I think that's right. Getting off to that good start is so essential. Well, thank you guys so much for coming up. Really great talking to you. And we're going to transition now to our last set of guests. Thank you guys. And we'll be rooting for you. We'll check in with you on DRF Live throughout the 2 days. Hopefully we'll get a chance to socialize. We've got a nice nice cocktail party coming up here in the Treasure Island Ballroom in a little bit. So we'll get a chance to talk a little bit. Come on up, guys. We're not. Oh, I have steps. I didn't mean to, Basil. I didn't mean to make you have to leap up on stage. I wouldn't be in a hurry to see you over hurdles based on that move up here. But our final guest on the show today, a returning guest from last year, an NHC regular, Basil DeVito, and also Basil's son, who we talked about on the show last year, but has not been on the show yet, Alex DeVito. How are you doing, guys?
Awesome.
Doing well.
Fantastic. When did you get into town?
Well, I got in yesterday.
I just landed this morning.
Excellent. Did you play in the last chance today, trying to get an extra entry?
No, we did not. My man here's got 2, so we're sitting on those 2 bullets, hoping that's enough to carry us through.
Fantastic, Alex. Do you have an entry in your own name, or you're just here for emotional support?
I'm here to help direct. I'm the co-pilot.
Fantastic. You do play in contests yourself, though.
I see your name on some
leaderboards.
Yes.
Are you expecting to potentially make qualifying for the NHC a horse playing goal for next year?
Absolutely. I've played in the BCBC. I won a $1 million finish contest. So this is the one thing I've yet to crack.
That's great. Now, Alex, when did you get into racing? I mean, I assume it was from a pretty early age, knowing this guy's tendencies.
Yeah, I mean, it started with just reading the names of the horses off the Kentucky Derby glasses.
But
he slowly brought me along, got out to go see old tracks like Saratoga, and now that I'm out here, great tracks like Del Mar. So
it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, last year, Basil, you were up here, and we talked about at that time brand new thing where at Treasure Island here you can bet on yourself, you can bet on who will win the NHC. Is that something that you've participated in again?
Well, I was very gratified to see that I was only 60-1, which is not one of the longer shots.
That's in the favorites group, I would think.
Well, and the fact is, when friends have texted me or emailed me and said they'd send me $20 to bet the future on myself, obviously I'm booking it myself, because I told them if I win 800 G's, I'll pay off. So I will buy one or two for Sylvanir. It's so cool. But all I want to do is finish 63rd. If they have a future book for finishing 63rd, I'd be betting that.
63rd, that'll be the top 10%. The top 10% are going to advance to the semifinal round after the end of action on Friday. So that's the significance of that number. If some folks out there are new to the format, and it's also a new rule. Last year it was the top 50.
Yes.
This year they've expanded it to be the top 10% to advance. I think it's a positive change. Basil, what are your thoughts in general about the rule changes? Is there a particular one that you're interested in?
Well, everybody looks at it through the prism of their own point of view. And obviously, I qualified twice last year. I qualified twice this year, all online, all on NHCqualify.com, which are all mandatory.
That's right.
All mandatory helps a guy like myself who's really at the lower end of the spectrum with these great guys like the winner today or the tour champion. You know, they're just at another level. So when it's all mandatory, it helps me.
Right.
Additional optionals this year, I'm not sure what my opinion is. Selfishly,
right.
It can't necessarily be good for me, except having two entries, maybe it will be.
What do you mean by that? I think I understand.
Well,
but explain for
well
the
if you think of it this way, with one entry, you have 10 optionals. So with two entries, you have 20 optionals. There are only about 46 races tomorrow after the mandatories. That's a lot of opportunities to ferret out a long shot or maybe a cap horse or something. So it's not in my sweet spot, although Alex has did get me going from the point of view that even with the change, my approach will be much like what we've had success online. You know, really get it down to a core couple of picks in each race, and based upon the odds and the needs, you know, just stay with the top picks.
With your having two entries, is your inclination going to be to cover more races, more possibilities, or is it going to be to try to keep them together on the strongest opinions? How are you going to play it?
Our current thinking right now, and I'm sure it's going to be this way tomorrow, I don't know what it'll be Friday, is keep them together. We're not going to spread around too much. We're going to have an opinion and play it hard.
Jonathan Kinchin last year used that strategy to great effect, landing his two entries at the final table.
It's unbelievable.
Of course, he was only able to play one of them. That's the other huge rule change that must be to your selfish advantage, that you can potentially be sitting there at the final table with two entries. Have you thought about that at all?
No.
We're one day at a time kind of thing?
Remember, 63.
That's right, 63, the magic number.
Yeah, you know, I'm 61, so I'll shoot for my age, you know.
If you can shoot your age, that's,
you know. They used to say when you're a kid you couldn't hit your weight. Well, see if I can end up my age, you know.
Now, one of the times we talked this year, we had a great strategic discussion that we actually talked about at great length on the podcast about, and it came down to the sort of necessity of, in certain situations, playing the favorites. And you talked about it almost like you felt like there was almost a moral obligation to not do so for fear of what people might say. Later in the year, it seemed like you had turned that around. You got one of your entries playing a very short price, as I recall. What's your attitude about favorites in an event like the NHC?
Until the end, no. But when you get down to the last few races, depending upon if you're in the money, and what happened that you're referring to is I was right there. I was in the money, and as long as you pick a winner at that point, then you can't move backwards. I guess you might if there was a real long one come in, but only at the very end when you're protecting a position.
Alex, let me ask you, what is the most important handicapping lesson you ever learned from your father? Putting you on the spot here a little bit.
The single most important one?
That's how I'm going to ask it. You can equivocate if you need to, but that's the question.
I would probably say, given recent and throughout our history, whether it's been spoken or unspoken, that once your picks are in, let them sit. Don't go and over second guess, because you know the second you come pull that horse out, that's the one that's crossing the finish line, and it's come to bite us a couple times in these qualifying contests. So that's one that I try to keep in mind.
That's pretty good. How about this one? What's a lesson that you feel like you've had to learn for yourself?
Learn for myself is probably just kind of keep things in perspective, stay calm. You lose a couple races, you might win the next one. You got to always think positive.
Now, when you say you learned that for yourself, is that not how you roll?
A
little emotional? A little of that Italian blood boiling up?
Hey, you got to use what you got.
Emotion can be a funny thing as a player. I think it can the way that I feel like it can help you is it can drive you, and it can give you that competitive spirit and make you, you know, maybe help your decision-making a little bit in that. But obviously, too much of it, you boil over, it can cut the other way. Having that sort of a little bit of a hot temperament on balance, is it a plus or a minus?
Well, I think it's a plus because the only time my emotion really comes out is coming down the stretch. And so if you're not getting anything coming down the stretch where you got any emotion, then you're not in play. So I think if I can, you know, maybe a dozen out of the 18 races tomorrow be screaming down the stretch, I'd like my chances then.
Now, Basil, of course, as folks know, you're also a television executive. You've worked for WWE for a long time. We've talked about this issue before, but I like to talk about it every time you come on. What do you see as with your TV hat on when you think about an event like the NHC and how it's evolved with the final table? Do you think this is something that can eventually become a marketable TV property?
Absolutely. But I believe that you can't start at the end of the rainbow. You really need a continuity. Listen, the Horse Players show, we know all the people that were in it. It was on the Esquire Network. It was one of the things that helped capture a lot of people's interest in the NHC Tour and the NHC itself. So I think there needs to be a continuity of some type of programming exposure. People still, the people who are on Horse Players, if you're with them at any racetrack, people are coming up, taking pictures 3 years later. So that's what we need. Ultimately, how the finals are presented and what form, it's a nice icing on the cake.
Sure.
But it really needs to be, it's more important what happens all year long. And I think there are so many things happening with Jonathan now going for almost $3 million. That's the kind of thing that will get some awareness. So I think, yes, there's opportunity in television, and especially with so many platforms and opportunities today where it doesn't need to be on, quote-unquote, a sports cable network. There's a lot of platforms and distribution opportunities, and what we need is broad-based exposure on an annual basis and then grow from there.
Maybe social media could be a tool that we could use to help grow that, encouraging players, whether it's sitting at their table here or they're out at a tournament, to use that as a tool, to little videos and things, creating characters and sort of showing the wider world these intimate looks at contest play. Is that what you're talking about?
Well,
maybe.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, you know, sometimes people say, "Oh, it all ought to be all optional." The finals. The fact is, the only time that there's a common shared experience by all these players are during the mandatories in this room. If you took away all the mandatories, you'd have 600 people betting the races. Right. And we have that in a lot of places every day. But when you have a common shared experience, so while I'm home online, there should be a connectivity. I do get texts from my name's popped up there. I get texts and emails and people calling, hey, you know, tough beat or whatever. But that absolutely is the case. There's only, you know, there's 4,500 tour players. There's 600 people here. It'd be easy to have tens of thousands of people connected to special events throughout the year, which are connected to the NHC. And, you know, all these people have their own social group. And we need to figure out how to make that a larger connected social group, because everybody really, we have a lot of similarities as people. And we would all be able to say the same things to one another, even if we didn't know each other.
That's great. Alex, what are you doing when you're not betting horses?
When I'm not betting horses?
Yeah.
Bet on something else? I mean,
he's working.
There's a lot of NFL football going on nowadays. No, but in all seriousness, I just got a position as the new director for the San Diego Sports Medicine Foundation.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. They provide a medical safety net for underprivileged youth in the area, high school students that don't have the means for their medical care. It's a real good place. I'm happy to be there. So that takes up a lot of my time. I don't get to come do fun shit like this.
That's great. Well, that sounds like an important job, and it's always good to have balance. I mean, you know, gambling, much as I like it, it's good to have some other stuff going on as well.
It's only gambling if you're not any good at it.
Who's winning the Super Bowl?
I got the Panthers easy.
Yeah, it kind of. kind of feeling that too. I don't know if I'm just overreacting to how to the ease of the last win. I don't know. It was something about I swear Peyton Manning winced every time he threw the ball in the last game. You wonder, you know, it'd be great to see him go out a winner if it is in fact his last game, just as a fan. But that's kind of the heart and the head is maybe pointing in a different direction. What are you? How do you see it going down? I mean,
Cam has just been unstoppable all year. I see a lot of Super Cam running him over. He probably puts one or two in the end zone himself on top of what he throws. I know they have a strong defense.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I mean, Denver is if anybody's gonna be able to control him, isn't it them?
Yeah, I guess so. But it's gonna be disheartening when Peyton gets 0 yards of offense. They got to be out there the whole game.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough. I was half thinking the under as a possibility.
Okay.
With that sort of exact same line of thinking that they might that the defense might do enough to keep Cam in check, but I think it's gonna be tough for Peyton. And I wonder if the hype, if it does officially, have they officially said? Has he officially said he's retiring?
I don't think it's official. I heard a comment that he made to Belichick about this might be my last rodeo.
Interesting, because it could be. I also wonder if that's if that sort of sentimental story, if that comes to be, is going to like mess around with this line a little bit and maybe make the Panthers an even more appealing play. But that's the Super Bowl. That's in a whole week from now. This weekend we got the NHC. I want you guys to talk about the idea of the show today. Was Family Feud a little bit, and how you know when you're competing against a brother, a husband, wife, a father, son, a mother, daughter, whatever the combination is, you know, you always have sort of equity in each other. But there also comes times when you're competing against each other. How does it work in your family? Have you been in that? You obviously, from just the way you've talked about handicapping, you work as a team at points. But does it ever go a different way?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you have any good ideas to throw out there, but.
Well, we spent his whole life, whether it was basketball, baseball, or whatever. Generally, with horse racing, we're pretty much a team. There's seldom is there a head-to-head competition there, but everything else, I'd say yes. Yeah.
You compete in other arenas.
Yeah, we have.
Like, give me some examples.
Well, listen, this poor guy, when we played stickball.
Stickball, old school.
Backyard.
You off know, the roof of the house for a home run.
And, he knew that he had to duck if he hit a home run. Right? It's just as simple as that. So, you know, it was only a tennis ball. I mean, where you know.
Throwing at your own son. Oh, that's unbelievable.
Well, would you have it any other way?
My dad, another obviously Italian-American, grew up in the Bronx playing stickball. We out in the suburbs growing up, we sort of transitioned it to wiffle ball. No. I feel like we were missing something. I feel like stickball sounds like a little more of like a old school New York
experience.
Well,
it was a broom handle, and for those that don't know, your dad was one of my heroes. He went to my high school.
Fordham Prep?
Yes, he was a Fordham Prep grad.
He just got in the Fordham Prep Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw
that. Absolutely. The stickball was a big part of what we did.
What was it? Like one my uncle has told me about how the rules would work. One sewer is a single, two sewers a double, etc.
Yeah, well, when you're in Connecticut, it's
it's a hill, a tree, a house.
And when he got big, I had to turn around the other way, so over the trees into the street was a home run. But
that's great.
Yeah, no, it's great stuff.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Best of luck this weekend. We'll be keeping an eye on you.
Well, you know, you were talking about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the winning quarterback going to say into the camera after the Super Bowl? What's he going to say?
Don't they usually talk about Disneyland?
Yeah, so obviously if I win, right, I expect you to interview me because you know what happens if I win. You know if I win where I'm going.
Not Disneyland?
No, WrestleMania, April 3rd, AT&T Stadium. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Fantastic. Always a great show. Grew up as a, and still am, huge wrestling fan. That's the other thing about me and Basil, the only people to have, I think nobody more than us has as deep a connection to both wrestling and horse racing. I've written some books with my buddy Chris Jericho and feel almost like an honorary member of the boys just because of all the great stories I've heard him tell. And Basil shares those passions, and such a great thrill to have Basil and Alex DeVito on here today. I also want to thank Jennifer Prince and Damian Sasso. I also want to thank Dan Kovaleski and, of course, the great Matt Bernier. Thank you so much for joining us, listeners, and we'll be here throughout the weekend with lots of updates on DRF Live, the podcast. I'm not sure if our friend Mike Hogan is going to be attempting to do one on Friday. You know, we'll send out a message about that on Twitter. I will be back on the podcast next week when we're done here in Vegas and the new NHC champion has been crowned. So until then, until the next time, I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. Thank you to Mike Hogan as well. I want to give Mike a shout-out, one of the few shows he hasn't been able to make. So thanks, Mike. Till the next time, may you win all your photos.